Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that keeps drone repellent next to its insect repellent. It's October 3rd, 2019, and we've got a ton of gaming goodness to get through. First up, Maddie and I talk about the games we've been playing, from tabletop gems like Sheriff of Nottingham and Betrayal Legacy, to video games like Hitman 2's new Island Adventure and Destiny 2's overwhelming new Shadowkeep expansion. We're then joined by Kotaku EIC Stephen Totillo to get his early impressions of Ghost Recon Breakpoint and talk more broadly about side quests. What makes a side quest a side quest? What makes a good side quest good? We close out with off-topic discussion of the TV and movies we've been watching, along with a very fresh music pick of the week. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show for another week of video game discussion. The fall is getting underway. The video games are coming out. There's so much to talk about. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and I'm glad you've joined us. And I am also joined by my co-host, Maddie Myers. Hello, Maddie.
Hello, Kirk. I'm here again.
You sure are.
But you know who still isn't here is proud father Jason Schreier, who successfully had a baby with his wife.
Yes.
She's here.
They did
it's real. It's happening. A baby exists.
There is a
Jason's
real baby.
Jason's very
now.
Busy, very sleep deprived.
A baby Schreier. Yes. We're very excited for him, though. So, congratulations to Jason, and tweet him your congrats if you feel so moved to do so. But we've been playing some.
Not having babies, having games.
Definitely not having babies over here, spending our time playing video games. I do want to say that Jason was playing some Destiny yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think he actually played Destiny before I did because I was like busy all day and didn't have a chance to. I was like, wow. All right, man.
Trying to log in, just trying to get a couple minutes in there.
Just trying to get it in there. I think there is that period right after you have a baby where you're actually kind of free to do stuff.
There's a lot of like cycling through naps and not naps and just sort of various boring chores of cleaning a diaper and just like cycling through the same three boring things over and over that like you want to get some video game time in or you're going to really go nuts,
can
right?
Knock out a few bounties or something. So I did enjoy hearing his initial impressions on Destiny. He said, and I quote, "The first mission is good."
Great.
That was what he said.
Rave reviews
about
from
Destiny
Jason.
2 Shadowkeep, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a little bit. But maybe first up, Maddie, what have you been playing this past week?
So I'm still playing Fire Emblem, but I'm not going to talk about it because what is there to say about that game? Except I will say I did just get past the time skip last night and I'm having a lot of feelings. This game's really emotionally intense. It's great.
Oh, man.
And I didn't manage to return everyone's lost items before the time skip. I still have three items remaining that I can't return to anyone because after the time skip, shit gets incredibly real and there are certain characters who just never want to talk to you again. And I'm just really sad because my Byleth is going to be carrying around these three items probably for the rest of the game, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I'll find a way to see these characters, but I don't know if the game facilitates that at all or not.
I don't think that it does, but it would be so awesome if that happened.
Met them in battle and I was like, wait, can I just quickly give you this like annotated dictionary of like whatever the fuck or like maintenance oil and like these other things
or,
that
like,
I just have.
You kill them and then there's like a scene of Byleth like kneeling
like
and just like placing the item on their
a
corpse
necklace
or whatever.
On them and being like, this is also yours. Yeah, it's
like,
wild.
Fine. Also, I've been carrying this fucking book for the last 2 months. It's, take it. I don't want it.
It's kind of amazing, though, because I feel like it's in character for Byleth to like just hold on to these things forever and be like, well, I just feel like I need to keep these things.
Good.
I don't know. I liked it. So anyway, I've also got together with my tabletop group and we played some games. We played Sheriff of Nottingham, which you talked about on this show back. It's
fun.
A bluffing game. It's very fun. You put cards into little bags and there's a different sheriff each turn and the sheriff gets to figure out out who's lying about what's in their bag and what isn't in their bag.
And it's quite a lot of, it's very fun to lie in that game.
It's
especially
just
in
mind
character.
Games. It's just more mind games. And I've really gotten into this kind of game. Like, this is my poker group and poker is all mind games. And now we just play all these different bluffing games. And I talked about Skull a while back, which is another bluffing game. I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying learning how to lie.
So I gather there's an expansion out for Sheriff of Nottingham. Did you guys play the expansion?
We didn't. Did
you
play? We just played the basic one.
What I learned from my tabletop group after we played it is that, so in this game, you put your goods, you're taking them to market, and it's like, I have got this, you know, I've got these, you have some counterfeit or whatever in there, but you tell them, oh, I have some bread and some whatever, like some fish, and I'm all good, and then really you're lying. And what I've heard is that the strategy that works, if you want to win, you should just always put legal stuff in your bag, and just every turn, just take legal stuff to market and never bluff.
You can do that. Yeah.
And apparently that strategy works to a kind of broken extent, and now in the expansions they've remedied that somewhat, and it's like way you have way more incentives, I think, to be smuggling, because that was the thing that I
That's
kind of
really
found when
funny.
I was playing it is, oh, just like follow the rules and you'll be fine, which is a sort of interesting accidental point for the game to make. So anyways, go on though. I want to hear about what else you're playing.
I'm don't know that I'm a very good liar, but I did find it very fun to try to figure out the various ways that other people were lying. So there's like a variety of ways that you can do that in this game. Like you can threaten to open someone's bag, or you can make a series of deals with someone about like how much they're willing to bribe you. And we got very honest with each other. Like, people would be like, okay, so I actually am carrying counterfeit items.
Cards on the table here.
If you were to open the bag, you would only, I would only have to pay a fee of like
$10.
So like, it's only like $10 worth of counterfeit items, but then it would turn out that the person was smuggling in like $30 worth, or like some absurd amount, and like it was just like, we took it to the next level where it was like, each time we'd be like, okay, so you got me once again, I am smuggling some shit in my bag, but it's not as much stuff as you think it is. And I don't know, it was just really fun, and I was not good at it, but I super enjoyed it, and I recommend this game. So
yeah, it's a good one.
The other game that we played is called Escape from Aliens in Outer Space. Have you ever played this game?
No, but I like the name.
It's great. So this is just a general hot tabletop tip. My friend who hosts these has started making playlists for every single game that we play. So like for the Sheriff of Nottingham one, we had like the freaking Disney Robin Hood soundtrack and like all these other like medieval ass songs that we're playing like while
Ren
we
Faire
played.
Shit.
Yeah, it was corny as hell. And then for Escape from Aliens in Outer Space, we put on like all this like super spooky ambient like haunted house in space type song, and it like really elevates the tension, because I'll describe this game in a second, but it's a similar bluffing game where some characters are aliens and some are humans, and you're figuring out who is who, and you're trying to stealthily move around the board. So like having tense music playing at the same time made the experience super fun and good, and I highly recommend doing that for anyone who plays any tabletop game with their friends. Make some playlists, go above and beyond. It's great.
So when I play, my tabletop group meets at Lucky Lab at this bar in town
that a lot of people go to play.
No, and I can't put on, well, we could like bring a little speaker and play it on our phone. I don't think it would really be the same, but that does sound awesome.
It's
that
so
sounds
fun.
Like a great way to go.
Well, other people can take advantage of this tip if they
we
don't.
Can go to the bartender and be like, hey, could you like put on this playlist? Like, and everyone
it's
else
like
is like, why is there spooky,
medieval music,
weird music
or something?
Playing?
And you're like, listen, we're playing Sheriff of Nottingham.
Right. They're like, sorry, it's that
awful.
Table back there. Those
Truly
guys
awful.
Are playing Sheriff of Nottingham.
Anyway, it's just fun to do. So this game, Escape from Aliens in Outer Space. Everybody has a board. It's kind of like Battleship meets Werewolf. So like you're looking at a map of a ship with all these different quadrants that you can go to. And each person has the same map, and you have a little pen where you can mark down on your map where you're going and where you think everyone else is going. And you do different actions for different kinds of squares. There's two kinds of squares. One of them forces you to draw a card that may result in the status effect. And one of them is just like a blank room that's like, we joked that it was carpeted, so like you would never make a noise if you entered the blank squares, because you don't have to draw a card to find out if you made noise or if some other thing happened. So there's some carpeted hallways that you can enter in the ship that are secret. But also, if you are, you know, saying you moved and being like all silent and you don't draw a card, then everyone knows you entered a carpeted area, and there's only a certain number of carpeted areas on the map. So you can kind of look around the map and be like, okay, well, they just drew two cards and then didn't draw a card and then drew another card, so I think I know where they are based on this map, but they might be in this other, totally other location.
That's
the
kind of battleship-esque part of the game. You're trying to figure out, based on limited information, where people are.
Yes, and like, we were playing with four people, so two humans, two aliens. You don't know who's who. The humans can't work together, and the aliens can't work together either. That's not the point of the game. But also, like, both humans are trying to find an escape pod, and there's four escape pods, and there's, like, a separate game where you can, like, make it so that you have to draw a card to find out if the escape pod works or not. But none of us even managed to get to any of the escape pods in any of our games, so it was a moot point. But basically, you're walking around, and at the same time as you walking around, you're simultaneously trying to come up with, like, a fake route that you're imagining you're doing. So, like, I would choose a route and be like, so I'm drawing two cards, and then I'm not, and then I'm drawing another card. But I'm going to pretend I'm in this other part of the ship that has a similar pattern in its path. And then if I draw a card, it might tell me that I have to say I made a noise in the corridor that I'm actually in. But sometimes you draw a card that's like, you can say that a noise happened in any corridor you want, and it'll suddenly be true. We joked that this was throwing a rock because we tried to come up with explanations for all, like, of this dumb stuff that doesn't actually make any sense. So you can throw a rock really far away, all the way across the ship, and make it sound like
kind of boomerang it around some
corners. It's fine. But then you can lead people to believe that you're in a totally different spot than where you really are and make an alien go there. Anyway, it's a very difficult game.
Yeah, it sounds tough.
Closest to getting to an escape pod, I was literally on the spot right outside the escape pod and then was eaten by an alien. And it was, like, extremely epic, intense, and super fun. I definitely recommend this game as well. Anyway, that's what's up with me. What have you been playing?
Well, I'm going to talk about video games, so anybody who gets sick of tabletop stuff, don't worry, but I do want
to
tell one tabletop thing.
I hope you skipped to this part. We didn't warn you to do that, but welcome back to video games.
So I'm going to promise you video games, but actually, really briefly, my group is wrapping up Betrayal Legacy, which I've talked about before, which is a tabletop, a legacy game that you play every week. Betrayal, it's like a haunted house thing. Every game is different. This game is wild, really wild. I've said that before. What's crazy about it is that every game has completely different rules. Like, you explore the house until the haunt starts, and then, like, something crazy happens, you know?
Yeah.
We've played, I don't even want to spoil stuff, man. There's, like, they completely reinvent things. They create different ways for different people to betray different people. I've been the traitor once where I knew I was the traitor and I had to hide it from everybody else, which was very hard because I wasn't totally ready to be in that headspace. So
it's
tough. How do I act like I'm on their team, but I'm not, and I need to get ready to do this? It was very difficult.
Yeah.
I actually almost won that, and it wound up having a great ending where I lost, but it was like the good guys won, which is that kind of the thing you want as a dungeon master is like for that to happen, is that they pull out, they eke out this victory. So that happened even though I was like really trying to win.
That's which funny. I guess I in the aliens thing, like, so when an alien eats a human, they become an alien, and like that meant that all three of my teammates were aliens when I was almost at the escape pod, and two of them told me afterward, they were like, we actually kind of wanted you to win
because
I was like so close. It's really tough when a game makes you become the enemy and you're like, but I was a human a second ago.
This was lonely too, right? Because I was the only traitor, and there was this weird feeling where, man, like we had done a campaign of Imperial Assault where my friend Sean was the, every time he was the Imperial Army.
Yes.
And he got kind of emotionally exhausted by the end,
because
he was like, and I get it at the end of the game. Even then, I was so excited that they had all worked together and had a good game, but I was also a little bit like, I just feel bad. Like, I was like, against everybody else, and then I lost, and so I kind of felt like I lost, and they were all high-fiving, and I was like, I'm glad you're happy, but I sort of feel bad.
But anyways, I'm the bad guy and I lost, and hasn't anyone considered my feelings?
Right,
in
what
all
about
this?
My feelings? It made me feel for Sean a little bit more. Anyways, that game is cool. I could talk about it more, but I won't. I'll talk about a couple games instead. First of all, I played the new Hitman level, the Hitman 2 level, which is this island resort in the Maldives, and it is really good. That game is really cool. I think the experience of a new level in that game is, it's like a very distinct thing because they've really dialed in the thing that makes Hitman good at this point, which is you arrive at a cool place and then you can just kind of walk around and figure out what you want to do. And that experience to me, I just am finding, and it's maybe just the place I'm at with games, that's like the experience I want to have. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit like how the Goose game feels when you've unlocked a few areas and you just start kind of screwing around. I think you just, this feeling of like, well, I can just walk around. Mm-hmm. No one's going to really bother me. Like, there's a couple places I'm not supposed to go, but I can just sort of explore. And it has really underlined for me all the similarities between the Goose game and Hitman. They're very similar. I was actually out at the liquor store over the weekend and I heard this guy explaining to his two friends. He's like, I overheard someone. It was like, it's like Hitman, but you're a goose. And I was like, oh, well, I know what game that guy is talking about.
That and then game's he's like holding doing really forth. Well, by the way. The
it
Goose
is,
game
yeah.
is sweeping the nation. I'm so proud
it is.
It's
a phenomenon. It is. It's nice to see this game. Someone was
it
like,
is.
I hope that this game sells a billion copies and then all the publishers decide that every game just needs to be like a harmless practical joke simulator.
No more open world games. No more service games. Just all games where you're an animal that's like ruining stuff. That'd be
like
fine.
Just harmlessly pulling practical jokes on people.
Yes.
And that's every video game. That would be
good. Sounds great.
But Hitman, you do murder them quite humorously. I would say that the murder in Hitman is awfully humorous. I like blew
slapsticky,
up a guy's.
Yeah,
there's always some physics or something silly that happens. I blew up a guy's what do you call it? Oh, his jet ski with like a remote detonated thing, and
great.
It blew him up, and his body just ragdolled and like went flying like 500 feet into the air, and I just sort of watched it go up and then like come down and flat, and it was quite humorous. So that is a funny game. And also you're always like killing these horrible, you know, plutocrat assholes who are like ruining the world. So anyways, that game is good. They just announced all this. There's always new stuff in that game. I kind of feel like I could just play Hitman 2 and there would always be new
forever,
things for me
you
to
mean?
Do. Yeah, kind of. It could be like my main game, and I'd be fine with that.
Mm.
And speaking of that, let's talk just a little bit about Destiny 2 Shadowkeep, which came out yesterday, and which I have a few thoughts on. Only they're like life thoughts. They're not really heavy game impression thoughts.
Life thoughts. I mean, Destiny 2 is life, and it is a game that's designed to be your life. How do you feel about your life?
That's the question. So anybody expecting super intricate, you know, impressions of the game, I think we're going to have Joshua Rivera on next week. I'll be able to play more by then. This game had like serious launch issues. Understandably, they always do. They were pretty bad. They had to take the game down, I think, for a couple hours. It sounded like it was. So you couldn't even play for a while. I played a little bit last night, but I have no idea. I started. I was like, okay, it's Destiny. But so we'll have more in-depth actual impressions next week. The thing I've run into, though, is the question of whether I can hang with this game. And I wasn't expecting it. I don't know what I was expecting. I knew this was the first major expansion since I stopped being a full-time Kotaku writer.
Yep.
And I've got a bunch of projects I'm like working on, freelance music stuff, other things that just I have to do. We've talked about this on the show, but I've like got a daily schedule that I write out. I've like, you know, and it's increasingly like I look at the schedule and think, okay, well, I can take this 3-hour chunk that I, you know, this 3-hour chunk in the afternoon that I was going to be doing whatever X and X that out
and
add Destiny 2 there.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to spend those 3 hours doing that. And I did that some yesterday when the thing came out and I played some of it. But playing the game, it just made me realize like, holy shit, that this game takes so long to play. There's so much in it. And that is like super good for everyone who wants Destiny to be that. But this is just the first time where it hasn't been my job to just hit it super hard for those first few days, the way that it was when I was at Kotaku and I needed to really cover it and write up impressions and like get a sense of what's going on.
Which
and
is what Joshua really, is doing right now. Like
exactly,
just mainlining
I'm sure he's just powering through it.
Yeah.
And having done that enough times, like that is a really fun way to play, especially because my friends are all doing that. Like a lot of the people that I know.
Your friends who work in the industry at least.
Some still work in the industry.
The ones with jobs. Other jobs.
Some of them are in the games industry, but they don't need to be playing it, but they did take the time to play it.
Right,
they like
sure.
had a little more time
Maybe
yesterday.
Maybe took the time off or whatever,
And then some are, a couple are games journalists who are playing it. And that's maybe a separate thing. I'll get to that in a second. But for starters, just impressions of playing this game. It's really cool. I mean, I haven't played Destiny in about 6 months and starting it up, it's on Steam now, worked fine. You know, I waited to log in until the game was pretty stable, got on, like my characters were right there, which is really nice, and just loaded it up, started playing and shooting stuff. Shooting stuff in Destiny is really fun. This is like a fun game. They haven't messed anything up. There's a ton of like minor differences and changes to the balance and the way guns work and like perks and super abilities and all this stuff. And it I think I've got a pretty good sense of all of it, but I won't get into it now. But they've changed a lot. The game, you know, is very different in all these little nuts and bolts ways. And there are nice little, you know, UI shifts. The best thing is they added there was no hotkey for going to your journal that had all your quests in it. Like you had to go to one menu and then go over one.
That's
to get
terrible.
To it. It was yes. It was easily the worst thing about Destiny 2. I don't know if that's true, but it was
two
bad.
Buttons and instead of
they
one.
They added it, and now I'm
really
like,
annoying.
I press J and it goes to my quest screen and it's beautiful.
Great.
So I do very much like that. But okay, so you start this game and you know, Destiny is increasingly structured as just this huge, like big, like kind of cloud of side activities that you can do. And it's just, you know, do X number of this, go kill Y number of that, go find this thing on this strike, complete this strike on this difficulty, do this challenge to get this gun. And there's all these like really long and medium short and short term things that you can be chasing. And there's exotic quests you can do to get different weapons. And there's like a story you know, in this one, you're back on the moon, and so there is like a story, but the story isn't really structured like story quest, story quest, story quest. It's more like initial story quest, which is really cool. Jason is correct. I agree with him. The opening story mission is neat. It's nice to go back to the moon. You know, that was in Destiny 1. It hasn't been in the sequel. Mm-hmm. But then it's really quickly like, okay, now you need to go and do five of these and like do six bounties or do three bounties for Eris Morn and then get the bounties back. And that'll take you to the next level in the quest. And then you need to kill X number of enemies over here. And I'm kind of working through that and getting more and more of these quests that all have these just huge lists of things to do. And I had played for like 3 hours and kind of not really made that much progress. I was, you know, your power level is 750 and I'd gotten up to like 789 or something, and was just sort of getting gear that leveled me up. 900 is like the new thing that everybody shoots for, and then after 900 you start leveling even more. And I finally get into into Discord with my friends, my sort of Destiny crew,
right?
And they've been playing all day, and I hop in and I'm like, hey guys, like, how's it going? And they're all in the middle of something. They're like doing some way later in the game Nightfall Strike or something. Mm-hmm. And they're all talking, oh, it's over here, wait, grab the relic, okay, no, I need it. Okay, it's by me. He's coming. And so I'm like in the middle of this conversation, kind of overhearing this. And I'm like on the third story mission, trying to shoot
things. Just quietly doing your chores.
And I can just tell that they're like, they were prepared. This is, you know, they take it seriously. They've been playing. They didn't take 6 months off from the game. They had all these tokens and things they could turn in to like really quickly level up, because there's all these like power leveling techniques that people do and stuff. And so they're like really high light level and they've finished the story and they're doing all this stuff. And I was like, oh, well, I can't really do anything you guys are doing, so I'm just going to go do my own thing, which is also totally normal as a day one thing. You know, this is nothing against them or anything. They're playing at their own pace. But being at a different pace from everybody else, it made me realize, I think I'm going to be at this pace this whole time. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to catch up to someone who plays the game really hardcore, because I just don't have time to play it that way. And that makes me worry that
Do you think it's just because you're 6 months behind, and like if you played it every day? I'm not saying you should or even would do this,
but if you were to
play it every day for like 3 weeks or something, would you kind of be able to catch up on some level? It's not even that kind of game.
I think that's probably true. Like if I'd have to really be dedicated to it.
Right.
And I don't know if I have that in me either. Like even playing for a couple hours, I shot a bunch of things and it was fun. It's really hard. I appreciate how hard all the new stuff is. I'm like getting killed a lot and it's really tough. I got to like play smart and it's a fun game. But I was like, I don't know. I was thinking about Goose Game. I haven't finished Goose Game. And I'm thinking about Hitman. I want to go do an escalation
in
that.
Yeah.
So I think that it's partly that there is this way of playing games that I've tried to embrace this year where I do a game and finish it and then go to another game and finish it. I've been playing so many of these like single player, you know, really smart self-contained games, Control and Outer Wilds and Metro and so on. And like going back to a game like this, especially now that Bungie has, I think probably smartly, especially for what players want, really embraced the MMO thing. They've explicitly said this, we're turning Destiny into an MMO fully. We've always shied away from that label. Now we're embracing it. This game is a freaking MMO. I mean, getting in there, I have my quest log is just crazy with like 2 years worth of quests. I think if you were starting new, it probably wouldn't be nearly as overwhelming. Like
I
have all this
I'm thinking
in progress. I would definitely be very interested in what you think.
I think it'll be hilarious if I try to just play Destiny 2. Now that I've said it on the show, I have to do it. But
yeah, I think that is what that means.
I think it'll be really funny. I don't think it'll go well because I also don't really feel like I have room in my lifestyle for a lifestyle game. And I don't even feel like I have room in my job for that. Like, I've got other stuff I've got to play for work that's not this. But playing Destiny 2 and finding out what it is, also not the worst. So like, it's a combination of things. But I also see what you're saying. Like, part of why I haven't played Control yet, or at least why I'm justifying to myself that I haven't, is because I just kind of want to see what happens in Fire Emblem. And that's like a normal human way to feel, to just be like, I'm already in the middle of a deep story. I already have a thing I care about. I'd like to see it through to the end and find out what happens to these characters I've gotten to know before I boot up something else and get to know a whole bunch of other characters, systems, sets of weapons, whatever, menus. Like, all of that stuff is very enjoyable, but having multiple pots boiling at the same time, I don't know, it's kind of a lot. And it definitely seems like Destiny is one of those games that's designed to be your game, like the game that you
your
play.
Pot it's the one pot.
You don't have
your,
any other pots
on your
you've
stove.
Got that one
no
pot and it's huge, there's a lot of water in it, it's boiling all the time.
It's funny. I did this like taxonomy of game types, and one of them is the mainstay. This is like when I was writing for Kotaku, and it was kind of like all these different games.
It's great.
How they fit. I liked that post. I was happy with that one. Yeah. And one of them is the mainstay, and it's like the game that you just play on and off throughout, and like Destiny or an MMO or something. And I'm increasingly like, I don't know. Like, I guess there is a way. I'm going to find out, because I'm definitely going to keep playing Destiny 2. I'm not quitting or anything.
Right. But you're going to find out how much of your life it's going to be.
Or if that works, if like it works for me to play it a little bit each day, because there's so much stuff, or each week even, I can't even play every day. There's so much stuff that's like on a timer or resets. You know, if you don't finish this bounty in 24 hours, you've got to do it again. And so I'll run and pick up a whole bunch of things to do. And then I'm like, I don't have time to do a tenth of this. And then it all just expires and goes away. And I kind of wasted the money that it's cost to buy them. And I don't know, like the game seems to increasingly reward people who put in at least, you know, 10, 15 hours a week.
Right.
Which is like a fucking lot. Like, that's a lot to put into a game.
But it's also what a lot of people actually want is
absolutely.
A game that rewards them for just playing that game. And it means that if you want to play it a couple hours a week, you're out of luck.
It allows for so many things. And I do want to stress, I'm like, this is me just totally feeling my feelings and like not like this game, Destiny is doing great. It's like in the best place it's ever been. And I can tell people are very happy with it. And that is great. Like, I don't want them to change the game for me or anything. It's more just like, oh, I have changed. It is not, has Destiny changed or have I? Though Destiny has changed a little bit, and that's kind of interesting. And yeah, I think that the thing you're talking about, the like, oh, this is just going to be the one game. It also really plays into the social part of the game, which is a great thing. Like, that's like the way that all my friends are like working together, and I want to work with them too, and I'm sure they'll come help me out and do stuff. And like, I love that process, and I just get to hang out with this kind of group of guys that we mainly talk when we
about
play Destiny.
And that's you know what? Yeah. That's not nothing.
No, it's like, it's just like my tabletop group. Like, it's a group of people I get to get together with, and those are like, that's the activity we do. Mm-hmm. And that kind of also plays into the social part of it there, because a lot of other games, even games with co-op, I'll play a little bit with a friend, but then we don't really stick with it all the way through. It doesn't have that kind of persistent quality that an MMO does. So it's nice to have that. It's just, just the question of, do I have time? And like, if I have X number of gaming hours a week and it's only like, whatever, 10 hours, which is kind of a lot, but that's, I definitely play video games for that much each week.
Yeah.
Can I really afford to dedicate it all to one game?
If you're not covering it for a website anymore? Possibly not.
Right. If it's not my full-time job. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. I'm definitely going to play more for next week.
And maybe it'll suck you right back in. Who knows? You might come back next week and be like, I was wrong. I love this game. It's all I want to play. I'm completely addicted.
I've played 80 hours. I'm all caught up to everybody.
To be determined.
We'll see. To be determined. In the meantime, why don't we take a break and then have Stephen Totilo on to talk about Ghost Recon and side quests.
What's up, split screeners? It's Victor. Guess what, Big Brother, Big Mother, Big Government, Big Internet companies are doing right now? They're reading your text messages and emails and tracking it all. But listen, you're a split screener. You clearly are smart enough to understand that our privacy is under attack. Hackers, governments, ad companies, my boss, your boss, and ISPs are gobbling up our data, like all of it. That's why I recommend getting the software that I trust to protect my online activity. It's ExpressVPN. Their apps use powerful encryption to secure our data. ExpressVPN runs in the background of your computer or phone, and then you just use the internet just like you normally would. You download the app, click to connect, and voila, you're protected. I never go online without ExpressVPN, and you shouldn't either. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN I've tried. It costs less than $7 a month, and it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. What's to lose? ExpressVPN uses new cutting-edge technology called Trusted Server to make sure there's no logs of what you do online. It's time to stop the hackers, the big brothers, the big mothers, the big bosses, the bigger bosses, and internet companies from grabbing all your data. Take back your online privacy like I did with ExpressVPN. Okay, split screeners, protect your online activity today and find out how to get 3 months free. Go to expressvpn.com/splitscreen. That's expressvpn.com/splitscreen for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit express.com/splitscreen to learn more.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move.
Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back with a guest who is Stephen, the editor-in-chief of Kotaku.com. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Hi, Maddie.
Hey, Kirk. Hey, Stephen. Nice to see you. It's been a minute.
So we wanted to talk to you because you've been playing this new game called Ghost Recon Breakpoint. And
this new game.
It's a hit new release, and we love to talk about new games on this show. So we wanted to hear from you about your thoughts on it. Is it good?
I mean, I have to apologize to the makers of Ghost Recon Breakpoint because I just say I don't play the hot games here at Kotaku.
What?
I let everyone else have first dibs, cover the stuff they most want to cover, the things people are most excited about. And then I'm like, okay, maybe I'll try to backfill. I think I mentioned this on the show before, but there was that fall where I don't remember what other games came out, but Kirk, you might remember because we joked about this a bit at the time. But other people were playing the cool stuff, maybe like Metal Gear Solid 5, and I was playing Mad Max, which turned out to not be that bad.
Yeah,
but nobody
that was
else
like
wanted
a
to play
classic,
that.
Classic in a
right,
way.
Nobody else wanted to play that because that wasn't the cool game of the season. So
I do think that it was Metal Gear 5 only because I remember playing Metal Gear 5 and thinking, man, Steven would really like this game and have a lot of thoughts about it. And you were playing something that was just. I think it was Mad Max, which, right, like you said, I think you wound up finding that game was a little bit of a buried gem, right? Like Mad Max had some stuff going on.
Yes, the best implementation of the Assassin's Creed style climbing towers that I've seen. That's the accolade.
You mean the widely hated climbing towers that you need to use to unlock the map? It is the best implementation.
Yeah, so in this one, it's balloons. It's a balloon that you go up to when you get to a spot where you want to defog the map.
Oh, yeah, right.
And it's
right,
very
right.
pretty, and you see these great like big sky vistas and everything. So I've just been on this streak though for like a year of like being like, okay, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, I'll play that. Rise of the Tomb Raider was good, and nobody cares. And I'm like, oh, great.
You're not going to mention The Division 2 or The Division?
I was getting to that. Division 2. Like, Division 1 was kind of a hot game. I'll get on that one. Don't worry, guys. I got this. And then, like, I mean, interesting game. I literally was just writing another article about it before getting on this show. I find it interesting, but I cannot seem to get to the games that the world has the most excitement for. And so, again, sorry, Ghost Recon Breakpoint. Although I don't think I'm to blame here because I just have not felt a lot of buzz for this game since they announced it. So I don't think it's me.
Do you feel like it's unfair? Is it a Mad Max-esque hidden gem or not really?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to be. I don't know how much you really can put timing onto a game in terms of, like, can a game be not as good as it could have been if it just had come out in the same state a year later or something like that. But I just don't feel like we were ready for another Ghost Recon open world game, Clancy game, especially because the aforementioned Division 2 just came out in March. And this is not exactly the exact same kind of game, but it's like a serious game with getting in your tactical gear and collect your guns and do the Ubisoft thing.
I have questions about this game because I liked Wildlands, but it was just kind of this, I think I've taken to describing Ubisoft games as a big bowl of pasta, and each one is just this huge bowl of pasta and you need to eat all the pasta, and it's like kind of bland, but then occasionally you get like a tasty veggie, but it's also just sort of like it's just tasty. You just keep eating it forever, and so I feel like
it keeps
Wildlands
you alive
is,
but at what cost?
It's sustaining, but right, it's not maybe the most interesting thing in the world, but it's pretty consistent, you know, like a big bowl of pasta. Wildlands to me, like, I didn't finish it because that game was this kind of mercenary style, like open map, just a million things to do, and they kind of laid it all out for you. So Breakpoint, let me see if I can summarize this mostly based on bullet points that I've read with not a little bit of interest. You know, I've been interested in this game because I do like this kind of game. So it's more, you're solo. It's like there's a story. You crash land on an island and John Barenthal, the Punisher, is like the bad guy and you're trying to eventually take him down.
Not
but it
literally
isn't like,
the Punisher, just the same actor. But
just
yeah.
basically the Punisher. I mean, he's the Punisher now, right? Uh-huh. He's the Punisher and everything he's in. He's doomed to be the Punisher forever. And you're like just doing story quests, but it's still kind of an open world. But the thing that I'm curious about, and this is, ties into the thing you were just saying, Stephen, about how like, is it time for this game? Does nobody want this right now? Is that they've added like gear rarity and they've added some sort of loot shooter elements to this game that were not in the first game that sound like they would make it feel even more like The Division.
Yeah.
And I understand there are gameplay differences, but that to me, I'm like, wow, that is a lot of open world, third person Tom Clancy-ing for a single year, you know? Do you feel that playing it?
Yes, I feel that. And this is a callback to, you know, a young Maddie and a young Kirk might remember. Let me take you back. Is it 1998 or so?
Oh, okay. So actually,
I was
Kirk.
In middle school. Go on.
Somewhere in 98, 97, somewhere around there. Whatever
great
the year is that Mario Kart 64 came out. Mm-hmm. I think it had come out in Japan the year earlier. People can fact check this in real time while listening to the podcast and then yell into their car speakers or whatever, wherever you're hearing this, or the gym, wherever you need to yell. But Mario Kart 64 comes out like early part of that year, whatever it was in the late 90s. And then late in the year, it was supposed to be Project Dream, which was going to be Banjo-Kazooie. And then they delayed it. And instead, they put out Diddy Kong Racing. People these days say Diddy Kong Racing is one of the best kart racers of all time. But let me tell you, as a game-starved N64 owner, the last thing I needed in the fall of that year was another kart racer. They had just put one out in the beginning of the year. And
yeah.
Like, come on, I have no other games. So in this case, I'm a sucker for open world Ubisoft games, games made by give or take 500 to 5,000 people, where there's just a huge, vast, beautiful territory to explore. Mm-hmm. And technically, Washington, D.C. of The Division 2 is different than this kind of a fictional island of Aroa that some sort of libertarian, possibly Peter Thiel-like individual has decided to...
Oh, it's a seasteading island.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Ubisoft just keeps getting so political.
He's cracking down on...
They're not afraid of it anymore.
He's cracking down on all the scurrilous blogs while he's out there.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So he's set up this island with all this like kind of high-tech, you know, utopia, whatever. And then the John Bernthal character... comes
you
in.
Almost called him the Punisher. Listeners, I want you to see that Stephen started
himself.
Saying the, and then stopped himself and said John Barenthal instead.
Yes.
That was very restrained of you.
Okay, yes. Yes, I cannot say that word.
No. We will not call him the Punisher. He deserves better. John
he's a
Barenthal
real man, not a
better.
Character.
He so is. He has a dog and everything.
So he, apparently the Ubisoft PR people told me that was a very last minute thing when he brought the dog out on stage. That was his idea.
He couldn't find a dog sitter. He was like, listen, guys, I got to bring my dog.
I got a dog. I mean, what are we going to do?
Wherever he is, they said he just takes it wherever he goes.
Wow.
And like, it was just like his thing. And he's like, I'm just going to do this with this dog. And they're like, oh.
You're not going to fight with John Barenthal. He's the Punisher. Or is he?
You know.
That's funny.
Anyway, he's kind of gone rogue. And one of the interesting things about this game is that and this is going to be a theme, Ubisoft kind of doing the same thing in multiple games, and sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. And in this case, what I think is cool is when they tease their next game in the previous game. So there was a surprise update to Ghost Recon Wildlands, the one set in Bolivia that came out in 2017, earlier this year, where suddenly they're like, there's this other ghost, you know, which is what the special agents in the Ghost Recon universe are called, and it's the John Barenthal character, whose name is escaping me right now, unfortunately, and he shows up, and he's kind of has a mission for you, and you do a few things, and they didn't say it flat out at the moment, but within a couple of days, they revealed that this was actually a tease for Breakpoint, and they've been doing that now, where Ubisoft games will get this, like, last-minute DLC or something. That Division 1 did it for Division 2. I was speculating this earlier this week on Kotaku that Assassin's Creed Odyssey hasn't really had its final update, and that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, next year they start teasing
the next
one of those. So anyway, his group of ghosts have overtaken the island. And so as opposed to the previous game where you go in with three AI buddies and you guys are all going through doing the kind of stealth shooting tactical stuff and can be co-op if you prefer instead of AI, you are solo in this one. I mean, you can co-op, but there's no other human characters by default. So it's just you and your drone, more survival aspects. So you can get tired.
Just you and your drone.
You have to drink water. You can bivouac. You can bivouac, mm-hmm. you can set it afire, and if you eat, you kind of have a little bit of extra stat boost, I forget of which type, next time you go back into action. But if you like read a book, a little book, little handbook that you have, then you can get mm-hmm. more XP next time you go into action.
You become emotionally fulfilled, and then going back into yeah. action isn't as daunting yeah. for you.
You engage your imagination.
I don't think it's literature that you're reading. I think it's like
tactical notes.
It's right.
Like, oh,
of course,
okay.
it's a survival
handbook. Fancy person would be reading
how to
about.
Skin a snake and eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Something exactly. like that. So, but it's basically, you know, you've got a big skill tree as you had in the previous game, but they've gone more
Sweet.
Heavy
Love
on
skill
like,
tree.
They've gone more heavy on the loot, the kind of collecting, yeah. which can then suspiciously be monetized. So, you know, weapon blueprints, all kinds of scored status, statistic-based armors that you can get, and then all of which you're constantly collecting and harvesting or whatever, and can then get from an in-game shop some of this stuff. Some of the stuff you can buy optionally from the microtransactions shop instead, although I don't feel like you need to do any of that. Always has that question, though, of have they sort of built in some of the grind. And it's kind of open in terms of, like, what you do. You can go after the main dude right away. Heather Alexander is going to review the game for us, and she's trying to do that. She's trying to do that Ganon Breath of the
this
Wild
This is go
style.
Fight Ganondorf. Right?
Yeah.
Like, go in your underwear and try to take him down with a stick. But she ran into a tank, so it's not working out so well. And then otherwise, you can kind of try to take down these various ghosts, the gone rogue, who are in the mm-hmm. island. Or you can try to do other quests on the island. And it seems like it could be interesting. Again, it's a huge, vast world, but I just haven't explored enough of it. And like Wildlands, the main character is kind of this blank slate. The writing is pretty wooden so far. And mm-hmm. the whole thing is surprisingly austere. I feel like you have some Ubisoft games that have a lot of personality to them. I think more like the Far Cry games, some of the Assassin's Creed, the Rayman games. But then you
Watch
have
Dogs,
these games that are much more, yeah, Watch Dogs, games that are much more stripped down, like Steep, which was pretty antiseptic. And I would say Wildlands to an extent was like that. And I'm getting some of that from Breakpoint too.
Didn't Steep have like the mountain that started talking to you sometimes? I feel like that's, it was like this one weird flash of color
yes.
in an otherwise very beige game.
Yeah.
So, okay, I have a couple questions for you about this. First of all, John Barenthal's name is Colonel Cole D. Walker.
Oh, yeah, Cole Walker. Sorry,
Cole
I just needed
Walker,
to
just to get that out there.
Cool. I needed to think of some generic words. Cole Walker, that makes sense.
It's good. Someone should just make a huge list of all of the action man names that have ever existed. There are so many, and they're all very good. Okay, questions that I have. First of all,
hit me.
How is the gameplay? Like, what is it like in general to like go to an outpost of dudes and shoot the dudes? Like, how is that?
It's great, Kirk. No, so what a weird
Love
question.
Shooting the dudes.
How is it like to go to a base and shoot the dudes?
Shoot the dudes.
I mean, you know, that's what you do in the game, right? I'm like, how is the basic gameplay?
How does it feel? How's the gunplay?
How's
feel
the
good?
Gun
does
it feel
powerful?
Snuff a man's life out. Watch him die.
I mean, that is the game, though, right? I mean, that's
so. I know. I'm just so, asking. So, right? as like, you guys, how is it to play this game?
As both of you know, and as listeners may not know, I play games in a strange way. One of the things I do is I spend too much time in menus and trying to understand systems instead of just diving right into the gameplay. So I have, I've
you
done
haven't
more
actually shot anyone in the entire game.
Like, I have a really good understanding of the microtransaction store, but I haven't really shot too many people.
No,
that's
they've thrown in this very weird version of a battle pass into it, which I've been trying to understand how it works, and mm-hmm. I've just been interested in some of the quest structure and stuff like that. But what I found is that I can't play it the way I played the previous game, which was I played it the way I try to manage Kotaku and the way that I most like playing an Assassin's Creed game, which is basically point
shoot
and
people from a distance.
Point and have other people do the awesome stuff.
okay.
You know,
that's
I've mentioned
while you're doing side quests that may or may not be relevant, is this getting a little too real? Or?
right. So my favorite moment in any Assassin's Creed game is in Brotherhood or whatever, when you have that posse of assassins and you're just walking down the street all suave as Ezio, and then you just like press that button to whistle, and then suddenly you're like assassin brother or minions, whatever, jump off a rooftop or out of a haystack and like stab a person to death, and you just keep walking down the street without breaking stride. Mm-hmm. And they've taken that away from Assassin's Creed games, but what I liked in Wildlands is that you could, with either your character's sights with their gun or with the drone that you can kind of fly into the air at any moment, you could tag up to three targets, and then you could either pull the trigger while shooting one enemy and then your three buddies would automatically shoot the other three targets, or you could not fire a shot at all you just pressed a button and the three targets you tagged would all be killed by your three buddies. And so you could do this thing like a super stealthy way where you are never exposing yourself to danger other than to just surveil, spot, mm-hmm. and then say, okay, tag them, take them out. And for me, that was the best way for me to be remain stealthy in that game. And I enjoyed playing it that way. And then I would kind of take things on myself if, like, the action got too hairy or whatever. And in this game, they've turned the stealth sync shot. First of all, since you don't have AI buddies yet, they're coming as, I think, free DLC. You instead are relying on your drone to fly around and kind of zap each person that you tag. But they've made it an item, an expendable item. So you only get, like, three sync shots and you have to collect more. So it's forcing me to do more direct engagement. So actually sneak up on enemies, which is, I actually say they're kind of correcting for the way that I was playing. And sometimes you can object to that. The developer should go with the way the players go. But I feel like it's good and healthy, actually, that I'm being incentivized to myself kind of use my stealth skills, you know, crawl, go prone. There's a nice thing where you go fully prone and then you press a button for prone cover. So you kind of dust yourself up and roll into your side so you look like part of the ground. And then there's various skill tree character class specializations. So I've picked one where I'm a panther and I have to do certain stealthy things. Whoa. To get more panther abilities.
Like an actual panther?
No, not an actual
Bayonetta
panther.
We're talking about?
No.
Hold the trigger.
Or Twilight Princess or whatever.
Suddenly way more interested. This sounds great.
When I fill up a meter, then I can activate my special ability, which is basically to throw some smoke down, and then I've created this moment of confusion, and then you can take guys out. Heather is playing as a sharpshooter, so she can press the buttons and then get like these armor-piercing bullets suddenly that she has the ability to use. Why would you suddenly have that ability? It kind of breaks some of the realism, I guess, that Clancy fans aspire to, so that's probably some of the one of the various friction points that some of the fans are having with the game. But I tried to go through a base yesterday and I tried to sneak through, and I was able to, you know, snap to cover and take guys out and use my drone to take people out. And it was a fun challenge. And of course, once I screwed up and accidentally shot a person, you know, that I didn't see coming around the corner that everybody else noticed. And then it was the Keystone Cops or whatever of me trying to get out of there and eventually fell on my face and got overwhelmed. But it's like, feels like solid gameplay fundamentals. I have also been playing a fair amount of Wildlands this year because I'd never gotten to that game. So I am a bit Ghost Recon'd out or something, and had taken a bit of a break. I'm not immediately gripped by the location. There's less ambient storytelling. So it was very controversial with Wildlands because you had basically, here we are as American special forces going to disrupt a drug cartel in Bolivia. And a lot of people felt like, hey, this is just imperialist, racist in terms of how the local population was depicted and the drug cartels. And so they've gone to a fictional location, but they've also gone to like cars that no longer have radios in them. So there's no local radio stations, at least not in the areas I've driven around.
the radio stations in Wildlands were terrible, so that might actually be an upgrade. I don't know.
But there's very little ambient, very little diegetic music. Right. There's just not, I'm not getting a strong sense of place yet. So it kind of could be anywhere.
Like if you have a fictional place, you may as well build it out and have something cool to tell you about the place, but it sounds pretty hygienic and maybe even boring that they just have this beautiful technological island where there aren't really people living there and there aren't, you know.
Well, all that stuff is there. I just haven't gotten to it yet. So there's remember, I checked the menus. There are like 50, there are like 57 VIPs for me to find, and there are, you know, 40 something intel things. I think there's all these treasure maps. I found a zoologist's treasure map. I don't even know what the zoologist would have left behind. And so I spent part of my day yesterday. I took a picture of the map with my phone, because that's what I do when I'm playing, you know, doing the treasure maps in Red Dead or something like that. You know, because they don't let you see the map at the game map the treasure map. So I've taken the photo of the treasure map on my phone, and then I'm looking at the game map and I'm like, where did the zoologist mark this thing? And I'm excited tonight to go home and dig on this mountain. It's probably gonna be like a tactical
some
test.
Garbage.
It's probably going to be a gun.
Plus 25 defense.
Yeah.
It's not going to be anything good. So, I mean, it's too early for me to say if there's like some real wonderful stuff in there. Solid gameplay, but so far more a comfort food game in terms of the mechanics of it. And it's like, I mean, I'm so drawn to the spectacle of Destiny or the real tight game design of something more linear like Gears 5, although Gears 5, as we know, was not fully linear.
Not anymore.
No. Just being thrown into a huge open
Ubisoft game.
Bowl of pasta. You can call it a bowl of pasta. It's fine. That's the new. That's what everyone's calling it now. That's the new term.
Okay.
It's a big bowl of pasta.
Bowl of pasta. Also, I gotta say, I mean, I try to avoid the main quest and go on a side quest.
Do you?
I tried doing that in this game, and I it went badly when I tried that last night. It's often my
go
judge
on.
Of quality of the game.
And this is a good segue that you set us up, Stephen. But
do what I can.
I want to hear about side quests because you are kind of the king of side quests. I think Maddie and I have done our share of side quests as well.
But no one compares to the king of side quests.
No, probably not. Stephen is really the master of side quests. So yeah, tell us, why don't you start by telling us about your Ghost Recon side quest, and then we can kind of spiral out in a bunch of side quests of conversation about side quests.
Great.
I'm honored and flattered for the title, by the way. Thank you for that.
No pressure.
So
this better be good.
So, I told you it was a bad side quest, so how good could it be? But right. I talked to some guy in the game, and he said that there's some cave, and there's a noise from in the cave. Can you do anything about the noise? Other people have gone there, and I'm like, oh, this could be interesting. Is this going to be like a Far Cry Easter egg or something like that?
Because Sasquatch was, comes running out.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. It could have been something more Clancy of style. I'd still be into it. So I go and I find there's a cave and there's some drones flying around outside. So this is a spray that you can spray on your character that is like a drone won't detect you spray, which apparently that'll be good to have in real life if and when they have that.
Yeah, I would think so.
So the drone away spray. So I sprayed some of that. The drone still attacked me, so I don't think I applied it correctly. Maybe I didn't get it on all my skin.
It might just be like a bug spray situation where you put it on, but like it's not really going to do everything.
Right, it doesn't really always work. It just
gets rid of most of the drones, but like a couple are going to get it.
And like maybe gives you cancer.
I didn't get the back of my neck. That might
be
what
it
was.
Right.
You know, it didn't spray the whole thing. I went in the cave. You know, of course, there's some dudes with shotguns waiting around the corner. Took them out.
Naturally.
Didn't
Good
use
job.
Stealth. wasn't a moment for stealth. Was going through, and eventually I found very deep in this cave that there was like a radar dish under there, and it was emitting a noise, and I blew up the drone, the little car drone that was nearby, and I don't remember what I even did with the radar dish. Did I shoot it? Did I press a button? Who knows? It's all the same in video games. And it was like, okay, now you have to leave the cave. Okay, fine, great. What do you do when you have to go through a cave in video games? Do you know? What do you do? You need to get out of a cave. Might be a little bit of a winding cave. What do you do?
You head up. You head toward the light.
Yeah.
You hug one of the walls, guys. You hug one of the walls.
Oh, so survival you don't get skill. Lost, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right wall or left wall. You pick one and you hug the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Good
Usually
life lesson right for all the listeners. Yeah.
I guess that's what you do in real life, too. But who can say?
Yeah.
I tried the right wall, Kirk. And eventually, I went up right back where I started in the room with the radar dish.
What?
So I tried the left wall. Same thing happened. I kept going back and forth. I started to question whether my brightness settings were off and I wasn't seeing the exit. I thought, I've entered into this cave. Surely I can exit the cave. Wait, maybe there must have been a rock slide and I didn't see it. And I'm supposed to leave right where the mission, you know, where I turn off the radar dish. Surely they wouldn't want me to walk through the whole cave again.
Okay.
I spent an hour in this cave. Eventually just found that I wasn't seeing where I had come from correctly, and I went outside, and then that was it. I had to talk to the guy, and that was the end of the mission. And it was just like, yeah, it was no wedding quest from Zelda Majora's Mask, let me tell you.
So for starters, I have had that experience so many times, especially with a new game, where it comes out, and then you do some random little thing and wind up stuck forever trying to figure out how to get out of a cave. Like, that is an extremely relatable story. So I guess I feel like maybe because I'm relating to that happens to people more often than you might think. Like, just getting stuck in a cave and spending forever there being like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
Or there's some vague objective that's like, pick up the thing. And because it's a new game, you're not really sure.
And you like, don't have a way to look it up.
Yet. You're like,
that's a whole
I'm not,
other
like,
topic.
Mm-hmm. What I want to do first is let us define what a side quest is. Maddie, what defines a side quest, do you think?
A character offers you something that you may or may not have to do, and without thinking, I say that I'll do it for them, and then I either do it for them or spend the entire rest of the game feeling incredibly guilty about this poor character somewhere in some town who has asked me to do them some sort of favor.
Okay, so somebody asks you to do it. That is one of the criteria. Stephen, any more criteria? What makes a side quest a side quest?
I think just the fact that it's not mandatory to get to the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's
non-mandatory.
Optional. But that already doesn't work because there's so many games where you have to do a lot of side quests in order to effectively beat the game or do well in the game.
Right.
Or a certain number of side quests.
Well, so a thing that I'm noticing more and more, and I noticed this in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, this is true of Destiny 2 now, this is true of, I feel like this is true of Ghost Recon and The Division. It's like there are games where the side quests are kind of built into the game. And so, like what you're saying, Maddie, is basically you need to do a certain number of things, you know, mm-hmm. complete 3 side quests, but they can be any side quest because there are 5,000 in this game and you just need to do 3 to get to this next step in the main line, you know, the main storyline. And it almost, I feel like there's this increasing blurring going on between the non-optional, like repeatable low-level content that is kind of what we think of as a side quest and the big set piece story missions that we think of as the story. Like playing Gears of War 5 has been interesting because that's just like a linear Uncharted style action game with very little side stuff, and it doesn't feel like that at all. There's never a point in that game, really, I don't think there is ever a point in that game, right, where they say you must go and complete 5 optional kind of bullcrap things in order to keep the story going. You can kind of just plop through the story and skip all the side of them stuff.
And be fine. But
that's the exception, I feel like. More and more of the games I'm playing now, at least these big tentpole games like Ghost Recon or The Division or Destiny or whatever, they all do kind of feel that way.
Well, you're talking, Kirk, what you're talking about are games that are governed by some overall character progression with experience
points.
Right,
a progression system is key to
that.
And so
with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which for those who may not recall, but it's, you know, set in ancient Greece. So they have the geographical setup of the whole archipelago of Greek islands. And the main quests almost all take place on the main landmass of Greece. And the side quests are almost all on the islands. And by the way, mostly made by a different studio than the ones that made the mainland stuff. Mm. And I remember Luke Plunkett, our colleague in Australia, being very frustrated that he felt like he was regularly under-leveled in the game. And he says he did everything in the game, but I got to think that the reason that he felt under-leveled and the reason that I always felt like I had more than enough levels is because I ignored the mainland and was just going around the islands, doing all the mm-hmm. island stuff first. And I tend to do that when I play games for whatever reason, is that I'm like, well, let me see all the stuff that I can do on the periphery before I do whatever I'm supposed to do. Maybe it's some sort of psychological shirking of responsibility and goofing off kind of tendency or something.
I feel like it's the opposite in my case. Like, if anything, characters asking me to do something in a game instills me with a sense of responsibility where I'm like, if I don't deliver this letter, who will? Even though it's a fictional mm-hmm. character. So, like, as soon as I get those side quests, I'm like, well, I already know these are side quests. So the main story, the comet is not going to hit the planet until I advance the plot and everything is going to be fine.
Right.
So I may as well deliver all these letters and pick out all these flowers or whatever people need and make sure all of their lives are in order before I get back to the main event. So I think I just have a weird psychological problem with side quests, which is part of what inspired me to choose this topic. But Stephen, it doesn't necessarily sound like you have the same problem.
No, it could also be down to the different games that we're playing because I guess in Odyssey and in Origins before it, people were asking for help and they always give you the option to say, no, I'm too busy. And I never take the I'm too busy because I want to do all the things.
Oh, yeah.
I
no,
do want
never,
to see
not
it
ever.
All.
Yeah.
But I have found it to be very rewarding to play games where there is side stuff and to do it because often I find that these are areas where the developers can be a little riskier, a little more creative. It's also the areas where the game can be the most banal because it can wind up being filler.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that when I think of some of my favorite games, like Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, which I was alluding to before with the wedding quest, that some of the non-optional stuff is just spectacular. It's like, you know, it's like a little side adventure. It's a moment where the game isn't all about you or isn't all about saving the world or something. It's about something a little bit more low key, something on the side, maybe just like giving somebody a little bit of a helping hand or something. In the case of that wedding quest, those who know it know that it's very complicated and involves playing through the excuse me, simulated 72-hour cycle of the game, which really goes through in more like 72 minutes, but interacting with a lot of different characters along the way, trying to help this character out or that character out to try to help these specific two characters fall in love, right? Or at least get together again. Mm-hmm. They're already in love mm-hmm. and they want to get married. And can you do that before the world ends?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like you're Groundhog Day, but you're trying to, you know, manipulate somebody else and not, you know, get somebody else to marry Andy McDowell and not you.
Yeah.
I think that for me, side quests, one thing that they do is when I really, really like a game, I find myself doing all the side quests because, like you said, Maddie, I don't want the comet to get closer to Earth. I don't want to reach that, this sort of point of no return where the world changes and suddenly, you know, it's like the last act and everything goes crazy and there's fire everywhere or the mm-hmm. city's rioting or whatever. And you have to kind of go finish. I put that off as long as possible. If I really like a game, Control is a good recent example of that. I loved that game. Did every single side quest before I finished it. And then I finished it and kind of didn't have anything left to do, which mm-hmm. I think a lot of people finish it and there are side quests left to do. But I sort of prefer to get them done before the end.
Right.
I think that Assassin's Creed Odyssey is like a very interesting example. And it's also good because all three of us have played that game. But that game did something with, I guess what you would call side quests, or what normally would feel like side quests, in that it kind of like threaded all of them really thickly into the story, where if you want to get the complete ending to that game, and I did, I like finished every single, I didn't finish the DLC, but I did all the stuff for the main game. I played like 100 hours or something crazy. And I killed all the cultists, and when you kill all the cultists, you definitely get a super important part of the ending. And there's kind of a main storyline that you can just sort of blow through much more quickly, but the cultists kind of take a while if you go hunt them all down. And then in the process of doing that, a lot of the cultists tend to like lead you to those island-specific collections of side quests. You know, like, I don't know, I can't remember. There's the one where it's kind of the Hunger Games is being fought on this island, and you go and you meet the person there, and you could completely miss this if you were just playing through the story. But you meet the person, you play it, and I think that the champion that you wind up fighting reveals herself to be a cultist. Like, it happens a lot in those side quests where the cultists who are, you know, who you're hunting down also are part of the side quests. And then, by killing all of them, you get a major story revelation that's part of the story. And that, to me, I don't know. I hadn't actually seen a game do that well before. I think that the quest structure of Odyssey was kind of next level. Like, I haven't seen anything since playing that game either. Am I crazy here? Am I, like, overestimating Odyssey or no?
I don't think so. I mean, part of what motivated me to pick this topic was I was thinking about Fire Emblem because, like, I just got past the time skip, which means that I've lost the ability to do a lot of optional battles that I was doing before it. And Odyssey has a similar situation where the more of the right side quests that you do, and you don't necessarily know what they're going to be, the more of a mm-hmm. story reward you get in the long term. And that's true in Fire Emblem across the board as well. Like, if you talk to characters in the right ways or recruit them in the right ways, you get a story reward, basically. You get new situations that you get to see, and that's your reward. It's very, like, cutscene as reward, which is fine with me. I love to watch a cutscene as a reward.
Yeah, especially in a game like
something.
That, right? And, like, so, the characters are a big deal in Fire right. Emblem, and that's, like, a big reward. Like, that's a worthy reward in that kind of game.
Yeah, and in that sense, though, it's, like, that just rewards my impulse to play every side quest and then frustrates me that Fire Emblem put me in a situation where I couldn't actually do that. But it also means right. that if I ever want to see the end of Odyssey, I'm going to have to beat every single side quest because now I know that I'll only get a story reward if I do that. And I want the story right. reward. So my problem continues, I guess. I don't know. Steven, you're still playing Odyssey, right? It's just still in your life?
Yeah. In fact, it's about to have its 1 year anniversary, and I was like, oh, I should do the 12 months later thing. I mean, Maddie, you had suggested it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, God, I have all these other games I'm trying to play, and I haven't really played all of Odyssey, so should mm-hmm. I go back? Because I haven't done all the side quests.
Right.
I don't think of the cultists, and there's also the mythological quests as side quests in Odyssey. I think of them as basically two of the other main quests, and that's what's weird about that game, and possibly right. next level is the idea that
yeah,
it has
kinda,
three
yeah,
major quest
at.
Lines going on at the same time. And then the side quests are things that I think of more like there's when you go on to the island of Crete, and you find the whole town that basically is based on love of or commercialization of the Minotaur. And so you go to, like, there's the tour guide who'll give you, like, the Minotaur tour. And there's the mm-hmm. kid who's going to take you to the Minotaur, but then something goes awry there. And there's the guy who's posing as the Minotaur. And, you know, possibly there's a real Minotaur somewhere around. And there's this whole stuff. And you can miss all of that because none of that is essential for the story.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's this whole society they've made with a bunch of different quests, and they kind of structured that together really nicely to tell its own story. And the island concept there, or having a sets of islands in that game, allows them to tell little, like, contained micro-narratives. A lot of people like what was originally the demo for Odyssey, which was the two islands I know which ones I'm
thinking
of.
I know what you're talking about, but I'm forgetting the names of them. Like the competing islands.
And you have to pick between the two lovers, and which one are you going to romance, mm-hmm. or are you going to be with them? And so this is like this, and they're like very complex interactions there. The side quests actually all sort of interact with each other in interesting ways.
And there's like
ways.
A denouement at the end where everything like comes to a head and people die and people fall in love. Yeah, it's on a different level than most of the rest of the game.
Clearly more polish had gone into that. Yeah, but that's ultimately all side quest because none of it is mandatory, and it sort of mm-hmm. works to tell its own story. And that's what I'm talking about, where I also think that people who make games are able to do these experiments even on these big stages of the big budget releases. Since I like Ubisoft games, it's been the sub theme of this whole spot that I'm doing here on the show, is I want to call out a couple of interesting moments in Ubisoft side questing. So first, Watch Dogs has some stuff in there that I think is worth highlighting, if good and bad things. They have, I guess I'll focus on the good. Two things that I like about that one. One, side quests are a way to experiment with different types of gameplay that aren't in the main part of the game. So most of Watch Dogs mm-hmm. is shooter with a little bit of stealth, but hacking is their main mechanic.
This is the first Watch Dogs that you're talking about?
Yeah. And you're in Chicago, right? And then there's this thing where they take this concept of QR codes and this concept mm-hmm. of what if a QR code was kind of painted on parts of walls and highway underpasses and stuff like that in a city, such that only by looking from a certain perspective could you actually see the full QR code. So like 3/4 of the QR code might be on a building on the other side of the river, but then the other quarter of it might be on a pole underneath a highway. And if you stand right near that pole, and then that building is way in the background, and you line up just right, you see the QR code in full. And so they have all these like basically picture-based puzzles, which are about essentially assembling a 2D image by lining things up in a 3D world. And they just drop that in the middle of an open-world
game.
That's
like The Witness, or like, or actually like The Riddler. A lot of the Riddler challenges in the Batman games are kind of like that, too.
Yeah, trying different types of gameplay out. Good thing that Watch Dogs 1 also does with side quests is that if you do like the 10 like weapon smuggler quests or whatever, these side quests that can get a little repetitious because it's the same gameplay mechanics for each side quest line, you then get more of a main story-like quest at the end. I guess most players never even found those because who's going to mm-hmm. do like the repetitious side quests? But it was an interesting way to reward people for doing a full side quest line.
You know, this makes me think this is like a kind of a side topic to what you just said. But
side quest.
I remember in Watch Dogs, this is a side quest of a side quest. In Watch Dogs, you could take like, remember you could take digital drugs in the first one, and you would go into your phone and then suddenly you'd be playing these like ridiculous alien invasion scenarios that would be set in the city. And it would basically be a completely different game with the same engine and the same mechanics. To me, at least, I remember reviewing that game and just, I really struggled with that game and didn't really like it, partly because it was just so all over the place. Mm-hmm. And there's this part where like I'm like fighting aliens in the city and I didn't like the main story. So suddenly I'm doing this really weird side thing that's kind of cool, but also like, what the hell is this? And I wonder if I've always thought about that criticism and how best to articulate it. Like saying this game includes even more kind of interesting things that you can do. Mm-hmm. Like that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like it's weird to knock a game for that, but it did create this feeling of just lack of focus that contributed to mm-hmm. the game's overall lack of focus that kind of bugged me. So I do that. Yeah. I feel like no other Ubisoft game has quite gone to that level in terms of just a ton of really out there weird things that don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you have the weird thing in Assassin's Creed Revelations where you can play part of it as a first-person puzzle platforming game. And so it becomes mm-hmm. this, and it's like where they're telling the modern story. But Assassin's Creed 3 is my gold standard for excellence in side quest design. Maybe more so than Majora's Mask. Because, well, it's interesting because like, do you want to play a game where the side quests are really obvious? Where the quest givers are out there and it's apparent to you, oh, I could be doing these other things, but I'm choosing to do
list.
So or not.
Yeah.
Or would you like to play a game where you don't actually know about all these other things and you kind of have to stumble upon them? And Assassin's Creed 3 is more like that. And what I found is that it was extremely rewarding to basically go into the underground under Boston or New York in that game and discover that the fast travel underground sewer system actually has a bunch of adventures within itself, or to discover that the ability to go into fist fights with certain characters could lead to basically being sent around the whole game world doing little fisticuff challenges that kind of tell their own little narrative. And that when I was in the New York area, if I started talking to the townspeople, they started asking me to do things like burn all the blankets that might be infected with smallpox, or to help people from foreclosing on their houses. And you start doing these things and you are like, wait, I'm kind of role-playing as a nicer person, as a person who's more beneficial to the community. This is actually changing how I think of my character. And the best side quest line in that game that I'm always going on about whenever I can, including this podcast, are the homestead, where you are actually creating your own ideal society, which adds so much to a game which is about you as a Native American having your land and your society destroyed by the British who are, and the Americans who have come in and through their revolution have run roughshod over your country. And here in these fully optional side quests, you are able to recruit characters from around the game world and build like a better society and a better life. And all of these things that you do make the game feel different, make the character that you play, Connor, who's kind of a jerk otherwise in the game, feel like a more rounded character. And that comes through side quests, to a point where the creative director of the game, Alex Hutchinson, and I have discussed the fact that he regrets how hidden some of this stuff was, because I think he would have liked more people to have that level of understanding of the game. Mm-hmm. But I've actually found it really fun to poke around, and that might be part of what reinforces my motivation to ignore the main stuff in a Ghost Recon Breakpoint, thinking,
right.
Well, I'll just find the side stuff that'll make this game go to the next level for me. So that's kind of how
you're
I play.
Be, like, chasing the Assassin's Creed, the high of Assassin's Creed 3's amazing side quests for the rest of your gaming career.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Well, that seems like a happy note to go out on. Listeners will be interested to hear from you about side quests and your thoughts on them, and what makes a side quest, if there's anything we didn't quite define it as, feel free to reach out. We are at splitscreen@kotaku.com. Stephen Totillo, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Love the show.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. That was a lot of fun. It is time to talk about some off-topic stuff, some non-gaming things. Maddie, what is your non-gaming thing this week?
Okay, so I am finally watching a procedural mystery sitcom that is inspired by Sherlock Holmes, starring Lucy Liu. It's called Elementary. Have you heard of the show? It has like 7 seasons. It's like a bajillion episodes. Do you know about the show?
I do know about the show. I know that people really like it, and I have not ever seen it.
It's great. It is... Every episode, there's a murder. Sherlock and Watson have to solve it. Lucy Liu's playing a gender-swapped version of Watson named Joan Watson. I can't remember the actor's name who plays Sherlock, but he's very good. So my girlfriend and I decided to watch this together, which is like essentially agreeing to get married, because it's like 7 seasons of a procedural mystery show.
That's
we have like
true.
Already joked with each other about like how absurd this is, because we're watching every episode together, and it's like been our main activity for the past week, is that we're watching this show and like talking about it, talking about all the changes from the books. Because I don't know, I'm a Sherlock Holmes nerd, and I think
I didn't know this about you. That's
a little bit,
that's
very cool. I like a Sherlock Holmes adaptation. I like a mystery procedural. I mean, it's no secret on this show. I love mysteries. I talk about mystery games all the time, murder mysteries. Mm-hmm. And this show, it's great. I can't believe I never watched it before, but I'm having a great time watching it this time.
Nice.
And it's like, how many times can you retell Sherlock Holmes? Like, okay, great. Sure. Gender swap Watson. That's a way to change it and still fundamentally do the exact same thing that's been said a billion times about this character.
I feel like the thing I always heard about this show was, and I recently watched, you know, H Bomber Guy, the YouTuber. I watched his video about Sherlock, remake.
That video is incredible, by the way.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It was
3 hours long or something. Or it was really long, and I watched the entire thing because it was so entertaining and eviscerating. And it really was one of those videos where I watched it and I was like, this is putting into words so many things that I hadn't even thought. Because I thought I liked that show at first.
But
and then I just sort of
worse.
Stopped watching. Oh, I like stopped watching by the third season. I didn't even watch it. And anyways, I remember the comparison at the time because Sherlock was the big flashy show, and Benedict Cumberbatch was like so sexy and everyone
of course.
Like, loved him. And everyone was like, actually, Elementary is a way better show. And
it
I remember people
and it,
saying
it
that
was
at the
sort
time.
Of criticized when it first came out, although I don't remember why. I think because it makes so many changes from the source material. Like in this one, Sherlock Holmes is like a recovering drug addict, and that's like a huge part of his personality. And the reason they meet is because Watson is his sober companion, and she's like supposed to keep an eye on him and make sure he stays sober. And then also, like, the situation with Irene Adler is changed in this show in ways that I don't really like. Like, there's some fair criticisms to be made about the show.
But has anyone ever gotten Irene Adler right?
No one ever has. So my standards are low for that. But, like, the show is just quietly good in a lot of ways that I think are really cool. Like, instead of having it be a show that's all about the sexual tension now that they've gender swapped Watson, and usually Holmes and Watson are super gay anyway, so I was like going into this being like, this is going to be seven seasons of Will They, Won't They? Like, is Lucy Liu going to finally kiss this guy? It's just a friendship so far. And
that's
as
great.
Far as I can tell, that's the whole show, is just them having this weird but cool platonic friendship. And I don't really see that many shows that are about like a straight man and a straight woman who are just friends, and like that's a normal cool thing, and that in and of itself I'm like, that's pretty rad, and it's like not a thing I expected this show to do. I don't know, there's a few like quietly cool things about this show that I haven't seen in that many adaptations.
This is the reason I always bring up Parks and Recreation as this turning point,
right,
is that I feel like Ron Swanson and Leslie Knope was this crucial thing.
Another example
show.
yeah It's great.
Where it was just like, they're just friends and they respect each other and we are never going to go there. It's just never.
And it's also like the actors don't even have that kind of chemistry. And Elementary is very much that same way. Where in the pilot, I feel like they try to introduce the idea of them being in a relationship, but like over time, it's like, this would never happen. This just isn't the wavelength that these characters are on. And it's just, it's cool. Anyway, what are you watching?
Well, we're watching a few things, man. We're still watching Star Trek The Next Generation. It's
great
such
show.
A good show. We're in season three. It's kind of similar where it's, we're just going to watch the entire thing and it's seven seasons and there's a jillion episodes in every season and it just goes on
and
forever.
And a lot of them are bad. But you know
so
what?
There are, you know, there are bad ones. There are fewer bad ones now than there used to be. We're getting some Ron Moore episodes now in season three. And he writes good episodes, man. He was a good writer.
Some great
when
ones.
He was first starting
you're in
out.
The middle, you're hitting the stride of good TNG.
It's a great show. So, but the thing I wanted to talk about is I watched the movie Can You Ever Forgive Me? Do you know about this movie?
I do. I have a screener for it lying around somewhere that I haven't watched yet. Tell me if I should watch it.
It's good. Yeah, I liked it. It's just on HBO now. I think I maybe have a screener too and just never watched it. And then it was on HBO and I was like, we're just going to watch this movie. Emily and I just don't watch that many movies anymore. I'm guessing this is a common thing. Like, you just movies are a commitment. TV shows, there's so many
are
of them.
Are a much bigger commitment, but they're shorter, so.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the trick. It's that actually you're watching a way, way longer movie. It's just broken up into little parts, so it's way easier
it's
to
like,
watch it.
If we watch four episodes of Elementary, we could have easily watched a movie, but like instead, mentally, you're like, oh, just another episode. Another episode. It's sad.
Sure, exactly. It's like, what are we going to watch? Well, I don't want to commit to a movie. Oh my gosh, let's just watch an episode of Star Trek. So, but we did finally watch a movie, and I feel like I'll go back and forth. Now maybe I'll watch a bunch of movies. Movies are very cool because
they
actually end. And this
they
one
actually
ends too.
End. Unlike Destiny 2 and Elementary.
Unlike so many
end.
Things in our lives, movies end. So this is a cool movie. It's a movie about a true story of a woman named Lee Israel, who was a biographer in the 80s and 90s, who then became this scammer who started making fake versions of letters from literary figures and then selling them to collectors as real and making money off of it. It's
good scam.
Yeah, it's cool. So it stars Melissa McCarthy, and it's like a serious-ish role for her. It's a funny movie, but it's pretty serious. And she was, I think, nominated for a bunch of awards for this.
Yeah.
She's amazing in it. She's an amazing actor. And it takes place, man, it's a really dour movie. It's very kind of, these people are just kind of bad people. She's a really just kind of spent, exhausted, pissed off lady who just is mad about life and things just aren't going well. She makes friends with this guy named Jack Hawk, who is played by an actor named Richard Grant, who I didn't know, who's also just this kind of very sour person. And the two of them form this unlikely kind of friendship. Kind of, you know, they don't like each other because they don't really like people. They're both kind of misanthropes and start this really blundering scamming operation. So it's this kind of a character study of just this woman who exists at this certain period of time in the like literary world of New York, which is not something that I know a whole lot about.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound very pleasant at all. Like, especially
no, it actually
that...
sounds fascinating to me. So I'm already
yeah.
on board.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the movie is like quite. I really liked it and found it. You know, it's a fun story. It's like not like a. It's not like a peppy. Fun movie.
Right,
it's
right.
kind of dark,
it's like a
but
thinker.
It's pretty light, and you know, no one's dying or anything like that. There's not. It's not like a high stakes drama. It's more just this character story. But a few things that I thought were interesting about it, I guess the way that it makes the '90s, like the very early '90s look, is just not appealing at all. It doesn't romanticize it. It just everything just seems kind of shitty. Like things don't really work. New York just seems kind of dirty. I guess New York is kind of dirty. Like the clothes just look awful. Everybody doesn't look good in the clothes that they're wearing. It's all these big weird sweaters and like suits that don't fit men and stuff. And it's just all like, ugh.
That's what we were doing. Baggy clothes were in. That's what it was like.
It definitely was. Fashion was just not really happening. And there's a lot of like, I feel like if you're really into like literature and literary figures and writers, you'll there's probably a lot of jokes that I didn't quite get because as much as I'm like reading books, I also, you know, I'm not like a huge literature buff. Actually, on last week's episode, I feel like I said that Emily Dickinson wrote Pride and Prejudice. Someone like made fun of me for that. Or I was like, you're reading Pride and Prejudice, you know, Emily Dickinson. And I was like, I do want to say for the record
British
that
authors,
I know that Jane Austen wrote... I know that Jane Austen wrote Pride and Prejudice. But anyways, so there's actually some pretty funny Tom Clancy jokes in this because this is like when Tom Clancy is taking off and he's like the worst writer ever, but he's super successful. But anyways, I liked it. It was nice to watch a movie like that, a kind of like abrasive character study movie that isn't a superhero movie or like an endless TV show, but it was just kind of this thing about this lady that I didn't know anything about. And it does make me kind of want to read her book because the book, Can You Ever Forgive Me, is written by the real Lee Israel and tells the real story.
Oh, cool. So. Yeah, that is neat.
Yeah. So pretty cool movie. That is my recommendation for that. So why don't we, let's wrap things up with a music pick. I've got a pretty cool music pick for everybody for this week. So a listener, a Strong Songs listener, emailed me. I just get recommendations for music and I really do try to check them out because so often when someone sends me a music recommendation, I'm like, I don't know who this is. And I just look it up on Apple Music and I'm like, oh, okay, this
it's
person's
great.
Amazing. And that's what happened in this case. So this is a singer named Natalie Prass. And the song I'm going to play is from her 2018 album, The Future in the Past, which is a dope album and I recommend everyone check it out. The song is called Oh My. And I'll play a link or I'll play a clip of it now. So she's super cool. It's like this, man, she has this like Erykah Badu meets like Hannah Huckleberg meets, I don't know, almost like Talking Heads. There's so many different cool like vibes going on. It's
kind of like Tegan and Sarah-y. I don't
know. A little bit of that. Yeah,
I really liked it. I think I'm going to check out the rest of this album. You always have good recs.
Yeah, I feel like it's funny because like I feel like everyone who gets credit for making a music recommendation actually usually owes that music recommendation to somebody else. Like This is a shout out to KB, who's a listener of Strong Songs and sent me this email about this. And I wound up, I like did a whole thing on this in like the recent Q&A episode on her song because he asked me about it. And I feel like that happens a lot. And that's the magic of music recommendations is that now everybody can recommend Natalie Prass to their friends.
And they can seem really cool by doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. They'll be like, that was such a great recommendation. That's such a good album. But it is good. It's called The Future in the Past. And I recommend people check it out.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's another episode on the books.
We've done it.
I guess we'll be back next week. We'll see how much Destiny I play in the meantime. We'll see
and
how
me,
that goes.
For that matter. Gonna check it out.
That's true. Oh, man, this will be exciting. Next week is gonna be exciting.
Destiny 2, the podcast. Great.
Oh, God. Here we go. Until then, Maddie, I will see you in a week.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edit and mix the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope that you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.